Okay, thank you, Judge Conklin. So, Judge Conklin?
Present.
Judge Clark?
Present.
Judge Getty?
I see Judge Getty. Judge Getty, you with us?
Present. Can you hear me?
Yes. Your video is stalled, but that's right. Okay. Rose, you still there?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, now we can hear you. So the last I heard, you called Judge Getty.
Judge Kamakarian?
Here.
Yep. Judge Kelly? Judge Siebert? Mr. Finke?
Here.
Mr. Kim?
Mr. Kim reached out and said he would not be able to make it today.
Thank you. Ms. Levere?
Here.
Mr. Riley? Mr. Slayton? Mr. Taniguchi? And Mr. Yamasaki?
Yes, good afternoon, President.
Thank you.
Well, as I see, Mr. Slayton has joined us.
Hello, I'm here.
Great. Thank you, David. And that gives us a quorum, right, Rose?
Yes, it does.
Great. All right. So welcome all. I just want to preface before we get into the meat of this meeting, just with a few comments. So one is to thank our newest members for joining us, Judge Clark, Judge Kalmakarian, and David Slayton, who are joining us on the committee. Thank you all very much. As with any subcommittee of TICBAC and TICBAC itself, from my perspective, we conduct very important work, important to the branch as a whole, and it's successful because of folks like you who are helping us out. I appreciate that as we also wander down this new path that we'll just step onto today. Your presence is more than welcome and appreciated. I also typically wait till the end to thank budget services staff, but I want to thank them right now because we might run out of time and I don't want to forget to do that. I do want to remind everybody with a note of appreciation, John Wardlaw will be with us till the end of the year, but then is seeking much greener pastures, but we so appreciate what he's done for us and where he's got us now, along with Zlatko, Fran, Rose, and other staff members who I'm probably forgetting to mention. As I just said, this what we're looking into today, I think, is another very important thing for the court, and we so appreciate their wisdom and guidance as we move along this path. So I want to thank you all for that very much. Just a couple preliminary matters to take care of before we get into Chad's discussion. The first is requesting a motion to approve the minutes of both our June 28th and August 2nd FMS meetings. Those minutes are included in the materials. Is there a motion to approve?
Yamasaki moves.
David, thank you. Is there a second? I'll second. Moved and seconded that the minutes be approved. In an abundance of caution, I'll show that Judge Clark, Judge Kalmakarian, and Mr. Slayton are abstaining since they weren't actually on the committee at the time, but we have a quorum to conduct business. Is there any opposition to the motion to approve the minutes? And hearing no opposition with those abstentions, I'll deem the minutes approved unanimously with those abstentions noted. So I'm going to turn it right over to Chad. You'll note that Chad is camera closed today, and that's for no other reason, and I don't think he'll mind me sharing this, than Chad had some minor, I think, dental work done that has made him rather uncomfortable, but he's a trooper and is going to make this presentation, but it also physically manifests itself as dental work, and Chad has opted to keep his camera off, and so that's obviously understandable. Chad, with my appreciation that you're continuing to do this, we really do appreciate that. Chad's going to, with the help of Zlatko and John and Rose, as needed, he is now going to start to discuss the potential estimate-based workload model for the courts as we look at that for an alternative funding methodology for the courts. It's something that we are, I think, we have recognized as may be very advantageous to us, but we haven't made a decision yet. And that decision is going to be supplemented today with the Chad's presentation. We're limited to about an hour. And while I am no means, by any means, trying to dissuade anybody from asking questions or making comments, I think those are probably best for our next meeting. If there's things that, as we work through this, that folks think are concerns for our next meeting, either you can email me, we'll be very cognizant of the open meeting requirements, but as we move forward, we'll start to build this model. But today's purpose is to make sure we all understand the potential, where we're going, and then to move forward from there. But again, you guys always are so effective in your comments. If you feel compelled to make a statement today, that's absolutely appropriate. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to Chad. I think there's a few materials as well to consider. I do remind everybody, this is not an action item. This is a discussion item only. It's an open meeting as we move forward with this discussion. And with that, Chad, you're up.
Thank you, Judge. Yeah, not to put too fine a point on it, it does look like I got hit in the side of the face with a 2x4. And rather than subject you all to that visual, I have decided to go camera free. I also sound a little marble mouth, so I apologize for that. So as Judge Conklin said, I think most of you will remember, I think it was now two TCPJAC SEAC meetings ago, we collectively as a group of CEOs and PJs had a really good discussion about sort of what our branch budget advocacy looks like moving forward. And we talked a lot about the current BCP-based approach. And then we had a good discussion about, you know, what might be some other ways that we might want to proceed in the future that will sort of ensure stable, predictable funding for our branch. And one of the items that we discussed quite a bit was I think it can be called an estimate-based model or an enrollment-based model. But something of that nature, and would that be something that we as a branch would be interested in maybe trying to flesh out? And I sense from that discussion and from discussions I've had since that that there is some interest in that. I think there are questions still about how that might look, and also how we as a branch might go about developing such a model and kind of putting our best foot forward. And so really what we wanted to do, sort of as Judge Conklin said, recognizing that John is going to be leaving us in the very near future, and that he has a lot of knowledge about this type of model, which I know Zlatko does as well, and I believe Adam, who's going to be coming to join us when John leaves, does as well. But we thought it might be worth just having this sort of high-level introductory type meeting just to start teeing it up so that we as FMS can all start thinking about what additional information we may need going forward and kind of what types of questions we may have. I sort of think of it as I don't know what I don't know, right? I don't necessarily know what all of the pieces of such an approach or such a model might need to be. And so that's why we thought it could be helpful to have this informational meeting and invite John and Zlatko just to kind of give us a little more information so that we can then as a group think about next steps, including, for example, how our work, any work that we may do, may also relate to the work that we know the Data Analytics Advisory Committee, DAC, is going to do, because this is one of those instances, I think, where we have a very well-established workload-based model. We sort of have the RAS piece, which tells us what our workforce needs are, and we have the workload formula, which tells us how we currently translate that into dollar figures. And we know that DAC is about to engage, or I guess has already started, in updating the RAS. And so just kind of making sure that if this is an approach that we as a branch decide we want to pursue, making sure we do it in a thoughtful and coordinated way, and that we don't miss anything, because we really want to go forward with our best foot. So, I don't know, John. I mean, I am sort of aware at a very high level that our fellow governmental departments, a number of them, use these types of models. I think education does, healthcare does, corrections does. And all of them have different metrics for measuring their workload, much the way that we use filings to measure ours. John, what are the sorts of things that we need to be thinking of or that we need to make sure we don't miss as we're starting to look at maybe something like this for our branch?
Sure. Thank you, Chad. Thank you, committee members, for inviting me to participate in this conversation. So with respect to the workload-based or estimate-based models out there, as you know, that all the major workload-based systems, whether it be education through their school enrollments, you have the Health and Human Services programs through many of that's caseloads, the correctional environment, you have population. We in the judiciary have filings as our major form of workload. All of these systems, absent the judiciary, have a means of going forward to the administration to true up, if you will, on what the workload is looking like for the current year, as well as for what's considered the budget year, the next year that's coming, an opportunity to twice a year have a conversation with both the executive branch and ultimately the legislature on the funding that's necessary to process that workload. Now, right out of the gate, I will tell you that not all systems are funded 100% because, quite frankly, it's a finite amount of money that's available, right? But the advantage that these other workload-based programs have is that they get first consideration of the available general fund because the methodologies for which they have determined is an accurate measure of the need are blessed by both the executive branch and the legislature. And then it's just a matter of how much money is available. And the way in which the judiciary currently operates is our filings, our major form of workload, aren't on a routine automatic consideration for a state general fund adjustment. And so what that means is we use the BCP process and we come in periodically asking for incremental increases, and then we have to justify our model year over year over year, where the other systems are more on a kind of an automatic feed, which is a different conversation with the executive branch and the legislature. So that model is one that is very, very common out there, and it is, as we say, workload-based. I think we have a lot of the we have the methodology already in place. It's that very methodology that we go right now with our BCPs to say, this is the amount of workload that we have. That's been a tried and true vehicle. We call it the RAS model, our workload formula that drives out how many filings we have. We have different types of cases. They consider it case weights. There's 20 or so of those. And we've walked the administration through these. They're very familiar with this process. And so a long way of saying, I think that probably 90-95% of what we would consider to be an estimate already exists. It's just we don't use the estimate path into the Department of Finance for requesting funds. So I'll stop and see if there are any questions, or Chad, if you want to take the reins back.
Yeah, so anybody have any questions for John about that? I I'm not seeing any.
Would it be fair to say, John, that we really couldn't use that model before because we had so many different funding streams like the civil assessments?
Judge Getty, thank you for the question. And no, I think that the opportunities always existed to try to opt into the workload-based, estimate-based model. This branch hasn't historically because, quite frankly, the level of need has been so significant over the years that it was just overwhelming, that it was highly unlikely. It would almost be a showstopper right out of the gate to say, hey, we need another $1 billion or $700 million. So the strategy over the last 7 years that I've been here is to approach the executive branch, the governor in particular, and kind of incrementally look at the different buckets, whether it be civil assessments, whether it's workload, whether it's the inflationary erosions that occur. And as money is available after the other workload-based programs are fed, then we kind of compete with the BCPs to get our kind of core workload money coming in. And that has been very successful over the last 7 years. That said, it has not been a very predictable way of addressing our core need of workload. Thank you for the question, Judge.
John, this is Judge Clark. Can you tell me how this estimate-based methodology can account for future legislative changes that increase our workload that are not connected to new filings?
Yeah, thank you, Judge Clark. So it's worth clarifying that the estimate-based model is really looking at the workload. So in our system, it would be filings. And to the extent that legislative changes occur that have a direct relationship to processing of cases, our filings, then the estimate process provides for an opportunity for, they're called premises, to be written up. It's a way in which you describe, based on the legislative change, the need or impact associated with that policy change on our workload. You just add in a premise to your estimate that would be considered at the appropriate timing. And so that's the way in which you you communicate with the executive branch on your need that's changed as a result of policy decisions by the legislature. Once the governor through the exec branch endorses that change, then it becomes a part of your permanent model of the estimate. So it becomes a part of that methodology that doesn't get challenged in the future. It's now a part of the formula that has been approved. Then that goes to the legislature for consideration, ultimately for your appropriation. Thank you for the question, Judge Clark. There's always an opportunity, in other words, for, to the extent that there are policy changes made by the legislature, to have a pathway in to ensure the adequate funding is obtained relative to the processing of the workload, our filings. There's a different lane that would still exist for us, that's the BCPs. And BCPs are really, really for the purposes of, if you have new policies that you as a branch want to push, that let's just say hypothetically that we wanted to endorse higher rates of compensation for jury service. We wanted the rate to go up. Well, that would be a policy decision that needs to be made, and we would run a BCP. That is separate and aside from the normal processing of our filings. You'd have the estimate, but you would run a BCP for consideration there, and it would likely be considered after your core workload gets funded. Then is there any money available for that policy decision?
John, this is Chad. I have a question for you. So my general understanding is that other departments that have this type of model submit estimates, workload estimates twice a year, right? Depending on how they measure their workload. Can you talk a little bit, if you know, I think you probably do based on your prior positions, but you know, what is the type of forecasting that happens there to sort of project, you know, to do those biennial, I can never remember. Anyway, those twice yearly estimates, what is the type of forecasting that goes into that?
Sure, I'd be happy to answer that question, Chad. So, and just for context, in my experience in the executive branch, I work for the Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation. They have a population-based model. And I worked at the Health and Human Services Agency, where they have a number of departments that are caseload-based. And so I've seen a lot of estimates, whether it's the Department of Healthcare Services, Department of Social Services, Department of Aging, you've got Developmental Services, you've got Public Health. They all have estimates that go in based on workload need. And I also worked at the Department of Finance for 10 years, and departments would be sending these estimates to me. So I've got a pretty extensive background. Zlatko's come from finance as well, particularly on the corrections side. And Adam, who was a former program budget manager over all of Health and Human Services, has a lot of experience with these too. So to answer your question, Chad, yes, it's a twice a year moment where workload-based entities come into finance. That the way that it works is in the fall, they're coming in the October timeframe for November consideration for the governor's budget that gets released January 10th. And then there's another round of truing up. Typically, departments are sending their estimates to the Department of Finance in the April timeframe for consideration in the governor's May revision. So those are the two kind of true-up points. And what they're truing up is both the current year workload as well as the next year that's coming workload to inform the final budget act. And so those are that happens, and it is forward-facing, right? So all these departments are looking at what's happening real time, and then what are they projecting their workload to be in the next fiscal year. And it's pretty unusual to see really big swings because of these. Every year you're doing this twice a year true up, and so you're forecasting, you're seeing what's coming, you're making the adjustments, and so it's a pretty stable way of operating. The only time I've seen really significant changes is when there is a policy change. For example, when there was public safety realignment, that policy decision that was pushed by Governor Brown and endorsed by a legislature had all the level one and two inmates were realigned down to the county, and the population estimate that Corrections and Rehabilitative Services used, well, their model was based on the number of in custodies that they had in the prisons. And so when you align big amounts of the, you know, large amounts of those folks going down to the county, all of a sudden you've got a real budgetary challenge, because you still have to have those prisons operating. And if the funding model is based on how many individuals you've got in those prisons and you've realigned them, well, you've got to refigure things out. So those are the types of things where you have pretty significant swings. Even in that situation, part of my job when I was pulled into corrections was to figure out, hey, wait a minute, if you realign all these folks down to the counties, how do you still have a funding model that supports all these prisons? So we had to implement a process called standardized staffing, which basically built in a funding floor for which you don't go below. In order to operate a prison, you have to have a certain complement of staff, O&E, irrespective of how many inmates you have that floor or it doesn't work. And so we established that floor to protect the prisons from just having this mass budget crisis going on. So wanted to call out that main point is I don't see a lot of fluctuation going on absent big policy decisions that the legislature moves forward.
Thanks, John. I saw Neil's hand up before I turn to Neil. I hear you using two key words there, stability and predictability. You think this alternative model enhances that for the courts?
Yeah, I do, Judge. Thank you for the question. And I the reason I say that is all these workload-based programs have these approved formulas that are endorsed by both the governor and the legislature. And then now it's just a matter of, you know, what does the workload look like? And so you're not constantly kind of at the back of the line competing with the BCPs. You in essence get fed first with the available general fund. Now, you got to understand that we are heavily dependent on the state's general fund, just like many of these other programs are. And when bad times come fiscally, that there are reductions. That will exist either whether you're in an estimate-based model or you're not. And a perfect example of that was when the pandemic started. We had a $200 million cut to the branch, right? We are a general fund. They were concerned that the pandemic was going to send us into a recession. They took steps. They took cuts to our branch and many other entities out there. This model, though, the estimate-based model, when good times come back, you're in line first to get those restorations. You're not competing at the back in line with BCPs. You're in the workload game, and it's a much more stable, much more predictable way of ensuring money for your core business.
Thanks, John. Neil?
Go ahead, Neil.
Well, I was going to follow up on something that John had talked about, was this funding floor part, because I don't think we have that really built into our formula. And, you know, the thing is if you look at our workload, it's gone down over the last 10 years. And a big chunk of it's probably traffic, to a certain extent, is civil. Yeah. And how do we deal with that? And you know, with traffic, there's a lot of exogenous factors. It's you know, who's writing the tickets and who's sending them into the court. And that's, I think, a big problem right now with our police agencies. They don't have the staff to be able to devote to simple traffic enforcement as opposed to all the other criminal cases they have to enforce.
Yeah, that's an excellent question, Neil. And so with regard to the floor, you know, I would argue that historically, the branch has been severely underfunded relative to workload, severely underfunded. We are now at the best point we've ever been, and Neil, you are accurate in that there has been a significant decline in filings to the tune of about 57%. But if you look at what types of filings and what that workload really is, I think you would come to a conclusion that the heavyweight of filings remains, right? And our workload formula, the RAS study, if you will, looking at all the different types of case weights, proves that we still, as a branch, are 137% of our true workload need. This branch has never been funded fully for the workload. And so when you're talking about establishing a floor, I would argue that our current base appropriation, that's our floor, right? We've been scraping by for a long time. We're better off than we've ever been. We're about 95% funded based for workload. But that is a point in which I would argue you should never go below. That is your funding floor. Now, the courts are going to have two main things that are a challenge. One is inflation. The Department of Finance every year posts the CPI inflationary expectations for the next year, Inflation erodes your base. If you don't have an infusion of dollars coming in, your base is eroding, so you got to factor for that. The second thing is the courts have to pay livable wages to their employees. They have to go to the bargaining table, and we know that those costs go up every year. It's a part of the bargain, and it's not unique to the judiciary. Every system out there has this responsibility to pay a fair wage to the employees. And so those are the two things that I would recommend that you factor in. You have to have an inflationary adjustment, and you need to also consider the cost of staff. About 85% of the cost relative to running a court are for staffing. Those costs are going to go up. I had my staff take a look over the last 6 years at what is the average amount system-wide that we saw as increases for staff, and it was a 3.59% increase. So I would suggest that you build in to this model a stair step that makes sure that you have an adequate funding that's understood, predictable for the courts, that accounts for the very true cost of running the courts. I hope I've answered your question. If I didn't, I'd be happy to take another stab at it.
That was good, John. Thank you. Sure. And before we turn back to chat, I just, from a bookkeeping perspective, I want to show Judge Siebert has joined us, and obviously Neil has joined us. Rose, if you can make sure you have them in attendance. And if there's no other questions for John, I'll turn back to Chad. Great, Chad.
I actually have, John, have one more question for you. So with the estimates that go out from these other departments twice a year, I just want to make sure those are estimates of financial need versus workload. Is that right? And I say that only in part because of the kind of the internal division of labor we have in our branch, where we know we have DAC that creates RAS, and RAS just measures, you know, okay, based on your filings, this is how many people you need. But then we have FMS and TICBAC and JBBC, which take that piece, here's how many people you need, and convert it into a statement of financial need, because we know that you know, people is a large part of the driver, but it's sort of not the only driver. So when you are presenting these estimates twice a year, you're saying this is an estimate of our financial need, right? Not an estimate of how many people we need or how many filings we think we're going to have. Is that right? Do I have that right?
Well, it's kind of all of the above. So
okay, right on.
And different systems have slightly different ways in which they do it. So in education, you know, they have a formula based on per pupil need, right? So for every child that's in K through 12 school, then, you know, there's a complement that goes along with that student. In the world of corrections, you know, for every inmate, there's a standard complement that goes along with that, factors in the need for security in the prisons, food, all the things that go into running a prison. There are these, I don't want to say formulas, but it is a standardized complement that goes along with the in custody or person in prison. So different models have different things that they factor in, and certainly we would have ours. We have upwards of 20 plus case weights, different types of filings that all take different amounts of time to process. And the complement that goes along with that certainly is you need staffing, right? You have an O&E complement. You have all the things that go into running a court would go into our model and would ultimately define what level of need exists to run the court system.
Thanks, John. David, I saw your hand up. You're muted.
Yes, thank you very much. John, thanks for the detailed summary. And every time I hear this, it sinks in better and better for me. But one of the things that I was curious about is, you know, as well as everybody else on this call, that the judicial branch has a multitude of sources of funding that it receives. And one example I would say is we have existing provisions that allow us to receive modernization funding or 2% automation funding or civil filing fees. And the question that I wanted to see if you knew the answer to this is if moving to this model would essentially discontinue those arrangements, or if this is something that would be in conjunction with those statutory or legislative funding mechanisms.
Yeah, most likely what would happen, David, is that as we engage with the executive branch and legislature on the model, and it's primarily going to be, I think, the executive branch, these things would be factored into your estimate, right, for the most part. Now, some of it may exist separately through different financial means, but the vast majority of it all gets kind of pulled into your estimate because it's all connected, right? It's all about how do you process your workload. And to the extent that there is that connection, then it feeds right into your estimate. Each piece of this is a component of need that gets factored in.
Great, thank you.
And I would highly recommend that as you consider whether or not you want to make this this jump, that irrespective of yes or no, you are going as a branch, you will be going back to the executive branch asking for workload-based funding. You're just going to have to. It's whether or not you're going to float a BCP and be in line after the estimate-based programs get fed, or you float an estimate. But irrespective, there is going to be a need to ask for more money because inflation is going to continue to erode your base, and courts, you will always be bargaining and the rates are going to go up. And those factors alone are going to force this branch to continue to ask the governor and the legislature for additional funding. It's just what lane do you want to be in? And at the heart of that, either way, you have a RAS study that you need to do. And that study is going to look at what is the true need within the branch. That study concentrates on time studies associated with the various different types of workload filings we have to assess ultimately what that need is. And I would, again, recommend finance, that this branch invite the Department of Finance to that table, because whether it's a BCP or an estimate going over, you want them understanding how your method of defining need is built right out of the gate. And we at the JCC have had ongoing conversations over the years, because as we float our BCPs, not an estimate, but our BCP saying we have a funding gap of 300 million, 200 million, whatever it happens to be, now it's about 137 million, we have to justify that. And so it leads to a conversation about, well, how did you assess your need? So they're very familiar with our RAS mm-hmm. model, Department of Finance. We have briefed them, the legislature, the consultants, they all understand it. And we use BCPs as our means of going forward.
Yeah, David, I might add is, you know, you're looking at things that are connected to case filings and the workload, but there are things within operations that are not directly related to filings. And those are things that can be either considered of their own aspect of an estimate for their own drivers, or they can be separate. So it's not like a black and white, your whole budget becomes part of an estimate. It tends to be more sophisticated than that. But as you evolve, maybe things get folded in through the process that John mentioned about premises, where there's maybe something that drives a certain kind of workload that's not directly filed related to case filings. But for example, right now, RAS doesn't do anything with interpreters. It has its own factors. if we ever get to the point where we could start predicting what we needed in terms of that might become maybe part of an estimate base. But right now, that's separate and apart. The driver of dependency. So, you know, to sort of say what John said, yeah, there's going to be a consideration of our world. But I think there's, you know, there are arguments that, you know, make them connected to something that's workload driven or not. And that is, again, is the evolution. When an estimate started for corrections decades ago, it is very different than what it looks like now. And John's recent example of realignment fundamentally changed the way that model is being managed. So they're all evolutionary. I mean, right now, again, we have our internal mechanism to determine our need as a branch for trial courts, and then what we allocate, and then we use that in terms of percentages. Turning that into what goes to the Department of Finance will be a process. But even the RAS doesn't account for everything that you do, right, David? Because not everything we could directly relate to a filing. We have our collections, you know the basket of non, you know, filings driven work. So those things can happen. Modernizing a court doesn't necessarily relate to the number of filings you have. But once you get there, there might be some relationship. But again, these are all the deeper sophistication you get. But the key is to get in the lane if that's what the desire of the branch is. That's the first step, is determining, is that what we want to do?
Excellent. Great. And I just want to, we're getting closer to the end than the beginning, got about 15 minutes left. I want to make sure Chad can conclude his remarks. So absent any other questions for John or Zlatko, I'll kick it back to Chad. Chad?
I think I saw Judge Getty with a hand up, so I don't want to cut
think,
her.
Chad, you might address my next question. And my question was about projecting, because easy for the filing numbers. I was just having a conversation. We're similar size to Sonoma. We probably have quadruple the homicide, and we also have death penalty cases. That's easy to value, but you can't predict how many homicides you're going to have in the future. We also in Solano County have this supposedly secret city that's just going to pop up. I don't know if you guys follow it in the news. Like, oh, well, how do you plan for a whole new city showing up in your county? So there's some advanced planning things and some tools. You know, I was having a conversation with San Francisco judge that, you know, talking about construction defect. Well, construction defect in subdivisions looks much different in Solano County because it's a growth area than it does in San Francisco. So predicting growth or predicting retraction, I was wondering, Chad, if you were going to address that or what, you know, otherwise I'm not sure how we go about predicting our future filing needs.
I think it's a good question, Judge. I don't know that I have the expertise to address it. I mean, that feels like one of those pieces that I don't mean to be presumptuous, but assuming that we as a group decide to move forward and continue to flesh this out, I mean, that seems like one of those things we're going to need to have more in-depth discussions about, along with some of the other things John has identified, like, you know, what sort of inflationary adjustment would we be looking at, and sort of these other increases and the floor and these other things. So I don't know. I mean, I don't know if John or Zlatko has anything to say, but I'm not sure I right now have the expertise to say, kind of, especially like with your hidden city is a good example, right? How do you, with such a huge sea change like that potentially happening in one county, how do you even make a guess as to what that's going to do for your workload?
Well, I will share that all the systems have that same challenge, if you will. I mean, education, you know, baby booms that occur, and how many students are going to be in this particular area of the state versus the other area of the state. Those are typical challenges. You know, corrections. What's the pop going to look like next year? Well, a lot depends on the policy decisions the legislature makes, that whether or not people are going to prison. I mean, they all the systems have that same challenge, and that's why there's the true ups that occur. So you have both the current year and the budget year twice a year being looked at and trued up for you know, what is actually really happens. You're predicting what's next year, and then when you get to next year, you have an opportunity to kind of fine tune, if you will. It's very rare that you see big swings absent pretty significant policy changes made by the legislature that certainly influence the estimate process. And again, I will remind you at corrections, you know, in that huge policy call to say, you know, realign all the level one and twos down to the county, that was a significant policy decision that had huge implications on the correctional system budget. But at the end of the day, you know, the cost to run those prisons remained pretty much the same, because you got to still have all the guards, the complement that goes along with running those facilities. And so not a big monetary change, but they had to change their formula so that it aligned with the actual need in the correctional system.
And hey, Judge, go ahead, Zocco.
I think this is where the intersection of DAC, Judge Heinrichs, and her committee come as part of this, because the FMS is sort of the allocation generator for the budget, whereas DAC is that workload analysis, data analysis, as they are. And I think, and when we did the original workload formula back in, you know, this time of 2012 going into 2013, there was the groups were basically meeting together consistently to, because that was a key issue, was understanding the numbers that are underlie RAS that then are the underpinnings of the workload formula. So not if this committee would be the ones answering that, but rather needing a product coming from DAC. So the coordination with Judge Conklin and Judge Heinrichs would be, and the respective committees would be really important to answer that question, Judge Giddey. But out in the departments that do this, they have groups like Leah's group that do forecasting. You know, my exposure to what was over at Corrections is that they had a data group, and they did forecasting, and they monitored, you know, information coming from the institutions, had discussions with local justice partners to understand maybe what was happening so it could inform their models. I know at the time that I was doing corrections, you know, a decade and a half ago, they were using Monte Carlo simulations that looked at data reaching back 10 years and understand that when I was the analyst at the Department of Finance, I said, we would break those down and look at those forecasts to make sure that there was some accuracy there. But it is, that's an important part of it, is generating those forecasts.
Judge Conklin? Judge Giddey, I think those are excellent questions. I think as we move forward at building this, I think we really have to keep that in mind. And we'll put that sort of on the schedule or the workload for building this model if we decide to go that way. But forecasting, predictability, and estimates. I like John's description about that twice a year estimate true up, I think really is going to help us sort of level that flight plan as this budget allocation would move out. And with that, Chad, we're within 10 minutes. I want to give you time to conclude your remarks.
Thanks, Judge. Yeah, I mean, and I'll be brief. I mean, as I said at the outset, really what we wanted to do here was just follow the big PJ CEO meeting with a somewhat more targeted meeting. I think there was certainly seemed to be a recognition that if we're going to move forward in this direction, that FMS will be a critical part of that. And as Zlatko has just articulated, DAC will certainly be a part of it too. And I don't think there will be any real issue as coordinating between the two groups. And so we, Judge Conklin and I talked and sort of made the conscious decision not to have this be kind of a voting action item type meeting today. I mean, it really was just designed to kind of, talk a little bit more, get the benefit of John's knowledge before he rides into the sunset. So I would anticipate sort of next steps. I apologize because I feel like I've been beating this metaphor to death, but I feel like with each of these successive meetings, you know, we add a little more meat to the bones of this skeleton, and it's starting to feel like, you know, it's getting to be time to really dive in. And so Judge Conklin, I think you and I, you know, probably need to talk about and maybe talk with JCC about whether there needs to be, you know, at a future meeting, a formal vote that yes, indeed, this is a method we want to pursue, so that we've formally made that statement, and then we can start having the series of meetings to flesh all this out. But other than that, I appreciate John and Zlatko, you guys being available today and sharing all your knowledge and just getting this on everybody's radar as even an option that our branch might want to look at. Because I do think I agree with what David said earlier. You know, every time I hear a little more about this, I kind of become more enthused and sort of personally convinced that this would be a good way for us to proceed for stability and funding for our branch. So we appreciate your time. And Judge Conklin, I don't think I have anything else.
Great, Chad. I really appreciate that. And I think you're very accurate the way you state our next steps. I remind everybody, we've got a TICBAC meeting a week from tomorrow on November 2nd. That's both an in-person, it's not in-person, it's Zoom, but it's both a public meeting, and then we'll have an educational session. And there we'll touch upon this as well with TICBAC. But I do think it's time in the relatively near future that FMS come together. We've aired this out now, and I think we had an opportunity to discuss all this, to at least make a formal decision that we want to pursue this course. That doesn't mean where the course will end, and it doesn't mean we ultimately are committing to changing this, but I think we do have to take the steps necessary to fully vet it. So that's coming very soon. So we'll go to TICBAC next week, we'll update TICBAC what's going on, and then I think we'll come back to this committee very soon to at least make sure everybody's comfortable with, as Chad just said it, the method we want to pursue. I don't know where that pursuit's going to end, but a method we want to pursue. So I want to thank Chad very much for putting this together, John Zlatko as well today for answering the questions we have. I think it really helps us to be very prepared for this, to take advantage of John's knowledge now, continue to take advantage of Zlatko as we always do, and their resources for us as we consider this. So that gets us pretty close to the end. Also, the other thing, just we continue to throw around a lot of these DAC and BCP and R and RAS, and I think we all know what these mean, but I am going to ask staff to once again put together a glossary for us, so we all know when we're referring to these things what they are, because I still sometimes don't even know what IMF means. So it'll just help us all. But before I adjourn the meeting for the day, any final comments from folks?
Judge Conklin, David here. So I can't recall if this was touched upon during the course of this discussion, but this obviously is a proposal that we're going to be considering and perhaps submitting to the Judicial Council to express our support should the council agree that this is the direction that we go. But it's also important for us to recognize that we have to maintain the separate train. The train that is going down the track, that is going to be continuing to put together all of the information. If this ends up being approved and adopted, that's great, but we still have to make sure that we have a mechanism in place to ensure that we can report workload and that we can make a good case to increase our funding, etc. So that's where DAC comes into play, and so there's going to be a lot of work that notwithstanding what we do with this, that we'll be continuing, and we're going to have a lot of dedicated resources to make sure that we get the information that we need to make a good proposal.
Excellent point, David. Even if we pursue this course aggressively and make decisions, it's budget cycles, numerous budget cycles away before this gets finalized. So I think David's point is a good one. We can't forget where we are right now. And the work that continues to be done for budget advocacy to make sure that we get the money we need and everything that goes with that, including equity. Discussions that will continue. I want to thank everybody very much for joining us. I'll finish with what I started with, John Zlatko. Just thanks so much for everything you provide to us. New committee members, welcome. Old committee members, you're not going anywhere. We've got some really challenging, but I think a potential of highly rewarding work ahead. And I'm just so glad you're all along for the ride. So unless there's any other comments, I'm actually getting us out 5 minutes early. I would conclude with my typical remarks of go Dodgers, but I think I'm going to save that until a new year begins. So I wish everybody well. Thanks so much. And we'll look forward to seeing you all a week from tomorrow at the TickBack Zoom meeting, both the open meeting and the educational session. With that, thanks all. Enjoy what's left of your lunch. Thanks again.